Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, this episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored, as usual, by Audible.com. If you'd like to download a free audiobook, just visit audibletrial.com/teacherluke, or just click one of the Audible pictures on my website. Now let's get started with this new episode. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode. On the podcast today, I'm talking to Jessica Beck, who has been working in English language teaching for over 10 years. She's an instructor, a teacher trainer, and an author of 14 textbooks for learning English. You may also know Jessica from her work on the IELTS Energy podcast, which is part of the All Ears English network. Remember All Ears English? I talked to Gabby and Lindsay from All Ears English on Luke's English podcast last year about culture shock. Remember that? Well, Jessica is part of the All Ears English team and is known there as the Examiner of Excellence. So she knows a lot about the IELTS test, and she's got some really good advice for any of my listeners who plan to take that test. If you're not planning to take the test, well, these skills can also be applied to your general use of English in general life as well. I expect that most of you know what the IELTS test is. In fact, I have done an episode about IELTS before on Luke's English podcast, in which I went through every part of the test in one episode, dispensing various bits of Jedi wisdom to help you get a better score. That episode is called Tips and Tricks for the IELTS Test, and is episode number 254 of Luke's English podcast, so you can just find it if you want to listen to that. For those of you who don't know, IELTS stands for International English Language Testing System, and it's now the world's number one test of English language level. The test measures your English in four areas: reading, writing, listening, and speaking. The maximum score in each area is 9. So if you get 9, it means you're an expert user of English. And the lowest is 1, which means you're a total beginner. So lots of universities, employers, and other institutions around the world require an IELTS score as requirement for entry. And 7 is usually the target score. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower, depending on the institution. Cambridge University in the UK, for example, requires a minimum of 7.5 overall, with no less than 7 in any of the individual categories. So if you want to get a place at a great British or American university, the first challenge is often to get a really good IELTS score. And what you need is good advice and helpful strategies to allow you to do your best. So in this episode, we're going to meet Jessica and talk specifically about the IELTS speaking test, in which you have 15... In the IELTS speaking test, you have a 15-minute interview with an IELTS examiner, and your spoken English is tested in a few ways. And Jessica has loads of tips for the speaking exam, and I'm hoping that she can give us some good advice on how having a sense of humour can get you a better score in the test. So listen for some more top tips for IELTS in this episode. Also, would you... What do you think would happen if I took the IELTS speaking test? Well, listen to the whole episode and you'll find out. Now, let's meet Jessica, the Examiner of Excellence from IELTS Energy podcast. And I'm going to call her on Skype right now. So here we go.
Hello?
Hello, Jessica.
Hey, Luke, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Great.
Nice to hear from you.
I you surprised me with your phone call. I did not expect this at all.
Really? It's not like we emailed in advance to arrange the exact time. No, it's a complete surprise. Yeah, I just thought I'd give you a call, see how you are.
Yeah, you're lucky you caught me at home, you know? I'm so busy.
Isn't it? It's such a coincidence. This is, isn't it Monday morning for you?
It is, yeah, but it's Labor Day here. So on Labor Day, funnily enough, nobody works.
Right.
So everything's closed.
So it should be called No Labor Day, really?
Exactly. That's never made sense to me.
Yeah. I suppose, me neither. We have Labor Day too, but I don't think it's today. Because
No, it's different.
No.
I'm sure it commemorates something. Like something happened in history to decide that today was when all workers got to not work. But I have no idea what that was.
I think there are sort of different labor days in different parts of the world. It's probably possible, yeah. Jessica, to somehow travel around the world and not work. You know, just sort of pick your itinerary very carefully so that you arrive in each place on Labor Day and you're just constantly on holiday. You'd run out of money, but who cares?
But that's okay, you know? If you just save up for like a year. And plus, some countries have so many holidays. Like I lived in Cambodia for a couple years, mm-hmm. and they have the most holidays of any country in the world.
Seriously, how many holidays do they have?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. But like every month, I would say 3 out of the 4 weeks there'd be a holiday. Like there was at least like 2 or 3 holidays every month.
Oh my
yeah.
God, I've got to move to Cambodia. That's brilliant. I thought France had a lot of holidays. It's nothing compared
to France does also, right? Is that where you are now?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm currently in Paris. I'm sitting in my flat, looking out the window, looking at the Eiffel Tower at this moment.
Get out of town.
Yeah, seriously. Really. I can see the Eiffel Tower. It's amazing. I'm living in some sort of cliche of Paris where I can see the Eiffel Tower out of my window. And if I open the window, I hear the sounds of accordion players down in the street below. And Woody Allen is making a movie here. And
there's some jazz music in the background.
Exactly. That's right. There's gentlemen riding around on bicycles with baguettes under their arms. You know, the usual cliches.
But it's a mime on a bicycle.
That's right. He's miming. Having a baguette.
There's not actually a bicycle. He's just pretending to ride a bicycle.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
While holding a baguette.
It's fantastic. It's really fantastic. So you're in Portland, aren't you? Which is on the west coast of the United States of America.
Of America. Yeah. I love Portland. Portland's amazing. Have you seen the show Portlandia?
I was watching some clips from Portlandia earlier on today, in fact. So
in preparation for our conversation.
To get myself into the right mental state to actually speak to a genuine Portlandian. Is that the right word for it? Portlandian?
Portlander.
Portlander.
I think is what we call ourselves.
Okay.
I've only lived here for like 5 years, so I'm not from here or anything.
Oh, okay.
But no, it's amazing. I mean, you could bike everywhere and people are like their priorities are in place, you know? Mm. Like you don't work like crazy. You sort of work enough to save a little bit and like still enjoy yourself and go see all the free music and cheap movies and stuff.
Yeah, I heard that there's lots of stand-up comedy in Portland as well.
Tons. Yeah. The Helium Comedy Club gets all the, you know, all the names or whatever.
Yeah.
We saw Al Madrigal there.
Right. Never heard of him.
He was a correspondent on The Daily Show. He was their Hispanic dude for a while. Yeah, he's super funny.
Okay, sounds brilliant.
You should book a show, right?
You
stand up?
Yeah, I do stand up. Yeah. I don't know if they'd take me, but I'd love to perform there. Definitely. The show Portlandia is sort of like the big show at the moment, which is kind of making Portland even more famous. Very funny program indeed. So Portland, where exactly is Portland, by the way? Just in case anyone doesn't know.
So if you picture the states, you see like Seattle in the northwest corner.
Yeah.
Right? Like up towards Canada. So Portland is like just south of there.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean? So Seattle's in Washington and Portland's in Oregon. So we're about an hour from the beach and like 20 minutes from snowy mountains.
Wow. Sounds amazing. Yeah. Sounds brilliant. I was in San Francisco just a couple of weeks ago and absolutely loved it. But we didn't have enough time to venture any further north. But if we had more time, we would have gone all the way up, visited Portland, Seattle, maybe all the way up to Vancouver and Canada. Just so many things to do, so many places to explore. It's not enough time.
Well, America's so big. I mean, it's, yeah, when I had my honeymoon, we took a year to travel, actually.
Yeah.
And part of it was we got bicycles in San Francisco, and we rode our bicycles from San Francisco up to Oregon.
Wow.
And it took like a month on bikes, like going through all the wine country and stuff. And then we just like hitched rides from Eugene to Portland to Seattle.
Wow. Sounds amazing.
So yeah, that's how we decided to come to Portland, because it's like a small town atmosphere, but it's still a big city. Mm. You know, everyone is just super laid back and like not worried about having the most expensive shiny whatevers, and just I don't know, just like hanging out. Everybody just kind of hangs out in Portland.
Sounds really cool. It sounds brilliant. All right. Well, nice to get a bit of Portland atmosphere on this episode of the podcast. Now, so Jessica, you're from All Ears English. I had Gabby and Lindsay on this podcast some time ago, so my listeners are familiar with All Ears English already, and of course they probably know it anyway themselves from the internet. But you are you do like your own podcast on All Ears English, sort of the network, right?
Yeah. So almost a year ago, I saw this ad to be like a co-host on a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I've been listening to podcasts for years. Like I was so excited. I was like, that's like a dream job. I could be paid to be on a podcast.
Yeah.
And so like I applied, but you know, it's one of those things you just apply for something really awesome and you almost never hear back. Right. You're
right.
Just like, I'm just going to try. But this time I heard back, and it was originally going to, like, I was just going to be a once a week or once every other week guest host to talk about IELTS test preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then it just grew from there. And so now we have our own podcast called IELTS Energy. We put out 4 episodes a week.
Nice.
And it's grown so quickly. I think there's like average of 9,000 downloads a day.
Wow,
like,
that's great.
It's so awesome. It's just, it's incredible. I never thought I could take my 10 years of like IELTS experience and turn it into something so fun, you know?
Well, it just shows
I guess
there's lots of people out there in the world who realize now that they can learn a lot of English through podcasts. And so, you know, that's how we managed to get. I mean, there's even more. There's even more than 9,000 a day, probably. I mean, just many, many, many more people who still don't even realize that this kind of thing is available. Well, so how do we find IELTS Energy podcast?
Yeah, so you can look it up in whatever you use to get podcasts, you know, iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. Mm-hmm. Or the better thing is to go to our website, IELTS.allearsenglish.com. You can get all the podcasts there, and you could see some of our other resources, because we developed a course now called 3 Keys IELTS.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a full course for all the IELTS test preparation that you need. So you can get into that and actually try it out for $1 now.
Right,
just to
okay.
see if you like it. Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right, then. So IELTS.allearsenglish.com, and my listeners can check that out. So you're the you're known as the what's your nickname? Examiner of Excellence. The Examiner of Excellence. It's a brilliant nickname.
I know. We.
This is because you're excellent at being an IELTS examiner, I imagine, right?
Well, I can't say if I'm an IELTS examiner or not. We're not allowed to say that. But that is my nickname on the show. But we don't actually use it. Like we thought it was going to be a cool gimmicky thing at first, mm-hmm. but we never actually use that name. I want to, though. I want to get business cards with that name. But I have been teaching IELTS for, let's see, I taught IELTS for 6 years in Taiwan. And then when I got here, I've also been teaching it for the last 4 years. I've done lots of like webinars for IDP Australia and some teacher training stuff with Macmillan. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Great. So, hopefully you can give my listeners lots of good advice here. And we're going to talk about the speaking part of the test. So can you just remind us very quickly of the content of the speaking test in IELTS?
Yeah. So the biggest difference between IELTS and TOEFL is that TOEFL is all on a computer. So the speaking test, you're just like talking on a microphone to a computer, which I think would be weird. But on IELTS, you're talking to a real person face to face. So it is a formal interview, but it's not, you know, supposed to be a conversation. So it's in three parts and it lasts the whole thing from 11 to 14 minutes. Right. And in the first part, it's just like personal questions about yourself. Super easy. Do you like trees, for example?
Do you like trees?
Yeah. There's some super random questions.
What's the correct answer to do you like trees? And is there a right or wrong answer to that question?
No, of course there's not a wrong answer. Unless you start talking about like something unrelated, like comic books or something. As long as it's related to the topic, it's just your opinions, and your opinions aren't wrong. So whatever, you could say you hate trees and want to burn them all.
Right, yeah.
And the examiner might not agree, but like that doesn't matter.
Okay, all right. So sorry, is that part one? Just like questions about you, questions about sort of things you like and your life in general, maybe questions about your family and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So like your free time, family, friends, studies, describe your home, your city, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So super easy. And the questions are informal, right? So when you talk about it, your answer should also be more relaxed.
Yeah.
And then part two, you have to speak for 2 minutes about a topic. So the examiner gives you a topic card. Mm-hmm. And you have 1 minute to brainstorm, to think of ideas and take notes. And then you have 2 minutes to talk, and you just have to talk for the whole 2 minutes.
Okay. So what kind of things would you get? Trees again? Is it likely?
It could happen.
So the government has decided to cut down all the trees in your neighborhood. What do you think?
Well, that could be like a part three.
Right.
But part two is still personal. It's still about you. It's like describe the last movie you saw. Okay. Describe your favorite place to read. Uh-huh. You know, it'll usually ask you to describe something, an experience or a thing or, you know, whatever.
It's typically things like kind of describe a gift that you bought for a friend recently, or describe a holiday that you had recently. That sort of thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay. So it's still personal. And when I teach this part to my students, I tell them to try and tell a story, because that way, like, it's easy to talk for 2 minutes if you have a whole story to tell.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's your answers organized, right? Like by time. So first we did this and then blah, blah, blah. Because they're all students are just kind of like floundering for 2 minutes, you know, and like not sure which direction to go.
Yeah. Story's always a really good approach. And I guess what we mean here is sort of an anecdote rather than a sort of once upon a time in a faraway kingdom, there lived a prince, and the prince had a tree in his castle. Not that sort of story, obviously, but more of the anecdote. Yeah, I had a holiday. I had a holiday last year. Yeah. That would be good, though. I don't know if that would be useful if you did tell a fairy tale. I don't think that's what they're looking for, is it? They want a personal anecdote of some kind.
Right. Yeah. Well, unless the question's about a fairy tale, you probably shouldn't discuss a fairy tale.
Right,
but
having
said that, it would be super funny. And I think you would definitely make the examiner laugh if you introduced your part two answer with like, once upon a time, there was a student and he saw a movie. And like, and then you laugh to let the examiner know it was a joke. Like that would be really funny.
As long as it's obvious that, you know, doing something like that, something quirky and original and humorous. As long as it's obvious to the examiner that you're making a little joke, then I suppose that could be a good way of breaking the ice and showing that you've got a personality and showing that you're even aware of something like the conventions of storytelling and things like that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But I guess really that's a bit of a risk. I think that probably it's better just to, you know, give a genuine account of something that happened to you, I suppose. But we'll look a bit more about humor and stuff in a second, right? What about part three is the discussion, isn't it? That's just where there's
Yeah, so... Mm-hmm. Part three is a little more formal. So a lot of the topics and questions will be similar to writing task two questions, for example. So it's a lot about your opinions, and you have to compare and contrast things or give advantages and disadvantages, make predictions, stuff like that. So the topic is going to be related to part two. So if in part two you had to describe the last movie you saw, then part three will be about should actors get paid that much, or what makes a movie successful? Why does the public still enjoy going to the cinema? Is downloading wrong? You know, stuff like that. So the topic will be related, but they will be more formal type questions.
Okay. All right. That's the overview of the whole test. So what do you think is a common mistake that many students make in the speaking part of the exam then?
Well, it comes from not knowing what the examiner wants. That's that's the first thing. You know, students can approach the test in so many ways, and sometimes they'll just, you know, go to a test prep class that's not even related to IELTS. Maybe it's a TOEFL class, and like it doesn't prepare them. First, like, you really have to know what the examiner wants on the test. And from not knowing that, people approach the speaking test all wrong sometimes. And it's extremes, right? You have this one end of being like super formal. I picture a student in like glasses and a tie and just like sitting super straight, like staring directly at the examiner, like just being sort of scary. And like every answer starts with some sort of memorized lexical chunk, like, I am of the opinion that. And so it's just, it's awkward. And like in part one, the examiner might say, describe your hometown. And the student would be like, I am of the opinion that I was born in Taipei. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes, yes. Like formalized, like memorized phrases and robotic kind of repetition of stuff that has been memorized rather than a genuine response in the moment, sort of an authentic kind of response.
So the why this is wrong is, and some students would say like, well, it's better to do that than, you know, just be too relaxed or whatever. But honestly, being too relaxed is, it's still wrong, but it's probably better for your score. So the other side is being too relaxed, and that, you know, I just find that sort of disrespectful.
Right.
Like if a student walks in and like the hoodie with the baseball cap over his eyes, and just like super slouchy in the chair, and I say, so describe your hometown. And he's kind of like, well, it's, you know, it's okay or whatever. Like that's also not acceptable. How these things will hurt the score. I just want to give your listeners an idea of like the real impact of these behaviors. Because you're graded on four things. So the first is fluency and coherence. If your answers are too short, like the relaxed guy, or if your answers don't quite make sense, like the too formal guy, then that's going to hurt your fluency and coherence scores, because it's just, it's not appropriate and it's not going to make sense. It'll also hurt your vocabulary because you're not using the appropriate vocabulary for the question, right? So that score is going to go down. And then pronunciation, of course, if you're too formal, then you're speaking like a robot because like you're nervous or whatever, then that's going to make your pronunciation score drop.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Could you just throw a few questions at me and I'm going to respond to them in either an appropriate or inappropriate way? Right. So it'll be one of three responses. It'll either be the very formalized robotic person who has no personality, or it'll be the sort of like chilled out kind of bloke who's, yeah, whatever.
What's up, dude?
Yeah, and or it'll be just me being normal. All right. Okay. So throw me a few questions and I'm going to respond to them in one of those ways. My listeners can guess which one it is. I think it'll be obvious, but let's do it anyway.
It's like a quiz. Okay. So tell me about where you're living now.
Oh, I live in Paris. It's like it's in France, and that, you know what I mean. This is a Mancunian accent, by the way, a sort of Mancunian. You know the Gallagher brothers from Oasis? Yeah, it's capital of France, you know what I mean? Paris. It's It's all right. Those are French people.
That's a really good example of where, like, even a native speaker would do really horribly on the exam. Oh, so funny.
Okay, can you...
if you had an American examiner, like, the American examiner might not even understand.
Really?
You.
Like, they're not familiar with that accent. That's what they have from Paris, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's like in France and all that. Like, what? Is that even English? Yeah, that's...
It is hard to understand. Okay, I'm going to ask you another question.
Okay.
So, do you enjoy taking photographs?
Thank you for your question. Photographs are interesting. I like photographs. It has been known that humans regard photographs as emotionally important. I find it difficult to engage with human emotions, but I understand the importance of photographs in human interactions, for example, holidays.
That's good. I'm going to stop you there. Uh-huh. That was good.
Was that... Is that a good response? Is that the way it should be done?
I think if you were auditioning for the show Humans, then you would be in there.
Really?
But for the exam, not so great.
Okay, all right. Give me another one. Yeah. Let me try again.
Okay. Do you often read the newspaper?
Yeah, I do. Well, actually, I say that I don't really read the newspaper much anymore because. I rarely get, the only time I read the newspaper is if I see one lying around and I'll pick it up. But most of the time I just get my news from like my phone. I've got a news app and it just gives me updates of news stories. And so I tend to just read news on my phone. So I don't read the newspaper much anymore.
Yeah, that was perfect. Yay. You get a 9.
Okay. So that's how it's supposed to be done. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, what about humor? Go on.
In that first part, students should answer between like 2 to 5 sentences, I usually say. So it has to be complete sentences.
Yep.
So, you know, like the informal guy just has like grunts and one word answers, right? Mm-hmm. And then, but you want to try to always have complete sentences, even though that's not really authentic because native speakers don't speak in complete sentences all the time.
Mm.
So it's not super authentic, but nevertheless, if you want a good grade, you have to always give complete sentences.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. What about humor? Because obviously on Luke's English podcast, I was going to say we are big fans of humor, but I mean, it's just me, man. You know, I love humor and I've got a special interest in comedy and humor and things. What do you think about using humor in the speaking part? Do you recommend that?
I do, and it surprises a lot of people because this is like a formal academic test.
Yeah.
Like I know when you and I were emailing about this show, you're like, well, because I usually tell students not to do that. Mm. And, you know, fair enough. You probably on most formal tests, you should not try to be funny.
Yeah.
But this is different. It's an English proficiency exam. It's not like an algebra quiz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just testing one part of your language ability. It's not just testing your, you know, grammar, your ability to memorize grammar rules or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the speaking portion, you are talking to a real person, you know? And if your personality is one who you like to make jokes and like especially making fun of yourself, I think is good to do on an exam like this because it shows your ability to be relaxed and to have real communication with somebody, right? Like it's authentic that you are like, this is you, this is your personality.
Right.
And the examiner can connect to that.
Yeah. 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 So don't be afraid to kind of show you have a bit of a sense of humor. I imagine that sort of like, you know, using it as an opportunity to tell a bunch of jokes and do some sort of pre-prepared comedy routine would be a mistake, of course. But showing that you've got a personality and that you've got a sense of humor is obviously going to be a good thing. It's a good way of making an impression and allowing your sort of your genuine and charming English to come out. Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. So, yeah, don't like rock up and tell a knock-knock joke or whatever, but
imagine that. So, what's your name? Knock knock. Excuse me.
So
knock knock. Who's there? Luke. Luke who? Luke through the window and you'll find out.
That would be bad. That would really piss the examiner off, yeah. I think, if you yeah. did that. Because the examiner has a job to do, and the person has to follow this script in front of them. Mm-hmm. In talking about humor, like, don't ask the examiner questions. Don't be like, has that ever happened to you? Or like, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like, am I right or am I right?
Right.
Like, I don't think you want to use those type of phrases with the examiner, but you can still tell something that's like slightly embarrassing about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if the examiner says, I don't know, do you like to take photographs? You can say, well, this is kind of embarrassing, but actually I'm kind of obsessed with taking photographs, mm-hmm. especially of food.
Right.
Like, I don't know, and tell like a funny story.
Or something like, I love taking photographs, especially of myself, to be honest, because I love taking selfies. And all my friends tell me that I've got to stop doing it, but I just love taking selfies. So I do take photographs, but just of myself.
Just anything that allows you to sort of, you know, chuckle and use some intonation in your voice. Like, to be honest, I take too many pictures of myself. And so that improves your score, you know, that directly impacts your pronunciation score. Because if you smile, if you relax and put some emotion in your voice, your pronunciation score can jump to a 7,
right?
You know, from like this robotic 5, you could push that up to a 7 or higher if you just relax and just be yourself.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Great. Really good. Really good advice. Let's see what else. So, could you give me some more examples of phrases and questions? Do you have any more sort of phrases and questions?
I think we tell students to not memorize lexical chunks, but honestly, like, you kind of have to memorize some lexical chunks if you're gonna connect your ideas and introduce your thoughts in the right ways, you know? So if you're gonna share a funny story about yourself or tell something that's sort of self-deprecating, you know, then you could say, you won't believe this, but, or this is crazy. Or like, you know what? I have the funniest story to tell you. One time, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You could say, let's see, I'll admit, or I'm embarrassed to say.
Yeah.
So I think that's enough chunks.
Yeah. Okay. So you won't believe this, but, or this is crazy, but, so like, this is crazy, but I have, my phone is full. And it's because it's full of selfies. And I'm really embarrassed to admit it, but I do take loads of selfies all the time in different locations, but it's always my face and no one ever sees them. That's the embarrassing thing. So, yeah, I do take lots of photos. No, that's not
true.
That's not true. No, that's not actually true.
There was, oh my gosh, this reminds, do you know a podcast or the radio show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
The name is familiar, but no, I don't, I haven't listened to it.
No. Okay. So, it's a show on NPR. It's like a weekly, news quiz, but it has 3 comedians on there and they just talk about the news and it's super funny. But it's like real news stories that they're like riffing on.
Yeah.
And for your listeners, like if you're preparing to take a IELTS test or just trying to improve your English at all, listening to this native speaker podcast is a really good idea. So a story came up this weekend where what the question was like, a man was hired for a job and then was immediately fired. Why? And then they had to, you know, guess reasons.
Right.
And the answer was because after he was hired, he sent inappropriate selfies of himself to the HR director.
Inappropriate selfies. I think I know what you're talking about. You know what she's talking about, right, listeners? Inappropriate selfies. That's not a selfie of the face. Well, not the main face at the top of your body. Anyway.
It was kind of everything. Selfies of the whole package.
And he was sending inappropriate selfies to the manager of the company?
To like the HR director, like the person that hired him.
Really? What? Why was he doing that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you're supposed to like contact them to thank them for their time or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
but
that's polite. Yeah.
An email, maybe a polite email saying, thanks very much for the interview. I'm very glad that you accepted me for the position. I look forward to working with you.
Yeah, exactly.
And rather than here's a bunch of nice photos of myself.
Oh, it's just so funny. Yeah. But anyway, one thing Lindsay and I like to encourage on our show, we talk a lot about creating a culture of thinking.
Yeah.
And that's just encouraging our students to pick up a newspaper or listen to a news show from the BBC or from NPR. Just so like when you... Well, for two reasons. When you go into exams like this, you have something to say. You have something to write about.
Yes.
Like something that always kind of drove me crazy when I was teaching like writing task two or whatever, they'd raise their hand and be like, but what am I supposed to say? Like, what am I supposed to write about?
Yeah.
It's like, use your ideas. You're a smart adult person.
Yeah.
So, it gives you stuff to use on the exam. But also, if you're going to have a conversation with a native speaker, you have something to say. Like, you have a way to start a conversation and something to comment on. So listening to, like, your show and our show and Wait, Don't Tell Me, this is your entrance.
I think a lot of native speakers of English, like my friends and so on, I think a lot of us sort of have a lot of stories or ideas for stories or themes or topics which we find sort of funny. And because we listen to a lot of comedy on the radio or comedy podcasts, or we watch comedy on TV, we are used to, you know, listening to comedians who find the route to the funny thing. Like someone like Jerry Seinfeld is a good example. Jerry Seinfeld will talk about, you know, taking a flight somewhere, and everything he says is just some funny little observation said in a very funny and engaging kind of way. So we'll say, you know, what's the deal with in-flight entertainment, you know? And then he'll kind of make all the, so it's sort of, we're used to hearing observations being given in a funny sort of way. And so
observational humor.
Yeah, observational humor, exactly. And there is a certain language around observational humor and a sort of thinking involved in it. But not necessarily our learners of English, they're not necessarily in touch with that kind of thinking and that kind of language and that kind of culture. And so they are at a loss when it comes to talking about a holiday in a lighthearted and engaging and enthusiastic way, because they haven't got the sort of the beats, you know, that most native speakers are quite well aware of. So yeah, engaging with, you know, comedy shows and entertainment shows and things like my podcast and your podcast can help to just sort of inform people of the right kind of language of informal speaking, you know?
And they'll also just get the joke more if they're hanging out with a group of Americans. Yeah. They'll understand why something is funny. I know that you've traveled a lot, and humor is different in every country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a lot more slapsticky, or it's a lot more physical, or there's a different reason why things are funny. But I think it's a very British, North American thing, this observational humor that really launch stand-up comedy into be like a mainstream form of entertainment.
Absolutely.
But it is a type of humor that I don't think exists in a lot of cultures. So, you know, when students are going to the movies and they're watching, I don't know, whatever movie, they're like, why are people laughing? I don't even understand. That's frustrating. But if you put yourself into this environment more and you listen to shows like Wait, Don't Tell Me, or there's another podcast that I love called How Did This Get Made? And it's three or four stand-up comics talking about really bad movies.
Right.
And it's hilarious. Oh my God. It's one of the funniest things.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's about sort of attitude as well, just like looking for the funny side of things. And also, as you mentioned earlier, being self-deprecating. Often, I think in American and British culture, a lot of the humor is about making fun of yourself and not taking yourself too seriously. And yet it sounds like we're talking genuinely, but in fact, there's an edge of sort of irony or something there, which is like inviting people to laugh at you as if, because we hate arrogance, right? We can't stand it. And so we like to kind of self-deprecate a little bit as a way of just sort of like taking the edge off and making sure that there's no sense of arrogance in what we're saying. We don't want people to take us too seriously. you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think in our, in our cultures, you can't speak too proudly of yourself because then people won't like you. They'll be like, oh God, like there has to be an air of some sort of being humble about what you're saying. So making fun of yourself is a good way to do that. And plus it sort of like opens you up to the other person.
Yeah.
You know, it shows this like vulnerable aspect where you're able to like make jokes about yourself and other things, and then it relaxes the other person as well. Yeah. So it's a good conversational like technique to to be able to make fun of yourself.
Yes, it is. Okay. All right. So I hope my listeners are paying attention and sort of making notes on these things. I say making notes. Actually, a lot of the things that we are saying here, Jessica, will be available on a page for this episode on my website.
A
lot of them can actually, you know, read little summaries and bits of information that we're actually saying on the page for this episode. Could you give me a speaking test? Do you think you could do that?
I could.
I wonder if my listeners are interested in actually hearing me doing the speaking test. I'm wondering actually, Jessica, if I should do it as myself or if I should pretend. I think I should probably do it as myself.
Do it as yourself. Yeah. Do it as yourself. I know that our listeners, some of their favorite episodes are when we give example answers because students really, really love to hear example answers. So. Right. Native speaker, how would you do it? I think that's a lot better.
Okay, so let's imagine that I've signed up to do the IELTS exam for whatever reason, and I've just walked into the room, and I sit down, and you're the examiner, and I'm the student, and so I'm going to take the IELTS exam. Let's see if I can actually pass the exam. Wouldn't it be embarrassing if I got like 2 or something?
That's impossible.
It's unlikely, isn't it? Let's be honest.
That's impossible. But I have, native speakers don't always get 9s, but yeah. I think that's just because they don't know what the exam is about.
Yeah, it's not that common. It's not like everyone who's a native speaker automatically gets a 9, which is something I tell my students, that this is a difficult exam for everyone. Everyone finds it difficult. It's meant to be. It's designed that way, isn't it? To challenge everyone who takes it. Anyway, I'm going to try not to stress out too much or anything. I'm just going to try and relax, be myself.
breathe.
Just breathe. Yeah, don't forget to breathe.
Chant a mantra to yourself. Okay.
I'm ready.
So what happens on exam day? So you come in, I look at your passport, what have you. And then I turn on the recording. So the test is always recorded. So don't let that make you nervous.
Okay.
And in part one, I'm just going to ask you some questions about yourself.
Okay.
So where are you living at the moment?
I'm living in Paris, which is an amazing place to live. And I've been living here for about 3 years. So yeah, I'm living in Paris, in the center of Paris, in the 9th arrondissement. It's very nice.
Why do you enjoy living there?
Well, I mean, it's Paris, isn't it? It's famously one of the top cities in the world, and there are these beautiful buildings everywhere and loads of great restaurants. It's an extremely attractive place, and it just feels like I'm living in a Hollywood sort of... I feel like I'm living in a Woody Allen movie. It's amazing. Yeah.
Are there many shops near your apartment?
Yeah, that, in fact, I live in a place with lots of shops nearby. I live in an area which has been gentrified over the last few years. And all these little boutique shops keep springing up on the streets around where I live. So just over the road, there's this super cool shop that sells these really trendy T-shirts and caps and things, and other little shops that sell jewelry and things. Yeah, it's loads of really nice little boutique. I can't believe I live here, to be honest. I don't shop in these places. I just can't afford it, but they're nice to have around.
Let's move on to the topic of contacting people.
Uh-huh.
How do you usually contact your friends?
I tend to contact my friends by text message, actually. I don't know why. I just prefer to use text rather than calling them. I don't know if this is just because I'm antisocial, but I prefer to just, you know, write texts, and I like to add smileys and things in my text. So it tends to be by text message, usually.
Do you find it easy to keep in contact with friends and family?
Yeah, I do. I mean, now that we've got the internet and everything, it's really easy. I mean, although even though I live in another country and most of my family are back in the UK, it's really easy to keep in touch just with things like WhatsApp and Skype and all that sort of thing. So I actually find it pretty easy, although some members of my family are a bit lazy and they don't respond to my texts, which is very annoying. But generally speaking, no, it's great. I can keep in touch with them easily using my mobile phone.
In your country, did people in the past keep in contact in the same ways as they do today?
Well, no, not really. No. I mean, it used to be, God, I mean, if it depends on how far you want to go back. People used to use things like carrier pigeon. That used to be, that was like the WhatsApp of its day. And, you know, what people used to do is using a sort of a quill, not like a normal pen, but a quill made from a feather. They would dip the quill into ink and then scrawl some very carefully worded formal letter and then attach it to the leg of a pigeon and then sort of very ceremoniously launch the pigeon out of a window and then watch it fly off into the distance in a very romantic kind of way. It's very romantic in those days, unlike these days when we use a text message. There's nothing romantic about a text, is there really?
I would love to receive a carrier pigeon letter.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. That would make my year.
Little leather container on the leg. And you open it up.
But would you really want to touch like a pigeon? Would you really want to get your hands in there like that?
Well, no, one of my carrier pigeons, they're very finely, well looked after, very finely bred. Nothing but the best carrier pigeons.
Nothing but the best for my messages.
You know, the carrier pigeon's a very different beast to the city pigeon that's covered in crap, you know? Like a carrier pigeon is like very well-maintained, beautiful
True.
Specimen. And when
they
one
live in gilded cages.
Yeah, exactly. They fed, you know,
caviar.
That's right. And when you receive a message from me, you'd know it because you know, it would be like this incredibly beautiful bird with amazing plumage would arrive at your windowsill and you'd be like, oh, a message from Luke Thompson.
Maybe like a special bauble around its neck from the shop across the street from your apartment.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like a cool hip-hop pigeon. You know what I mean? Hip-hop carrier pigeon. Yes.
Just to let your listeners know, on the test, the examiner is not allowed to like comment on anything you're saying. So that makes some people nervous because they're like, the examiner just stared at me and just went on to the next question. Mm. So the examiner is not allowed to comment, right?
Right.
The person can't even say like, oh, that's interesting. Like nothing. They just have to ask the question. So,
yes. Okay. Did I go on a little bit in some of my answers? Were some of my answers a bit too long?
No.
Really?
If it's, you know, like five sentences or whatever, that's fine. And also the examiner does have to keep track of the time. So if you do speak for too long, the examiner will like interrupt you and go on to the next question.
Yes.
So I think that also makes students nervous, you know, like, oh, she didn't like what I was saying. Like she made me stop talking. Yeah. Well, you know, like, as I said, it is a job for the examiner also. And they do have to ask you like a certain amount of stuff in this period of time. So yeah, don't be nervous if the examiner's like, oh, thank you.
Yeah. I've examined a few exams before, like Cambridge exams and things, and I always find it kind of a bit awkward when I have to say thank you, as if it feels like I'm going, okay, now shut up, you know. It feels like I'm saying shut up. It's actually thank you, meaning you know, we've just run out of time. But so yeah, if the examiner says thank you and interrupts you, it's not a problem. It doesn't mean you've done something wrong. It's just time.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And I think usually the examiners are, I mean, they've been doing this for so long, they know how to do it in a nice way to like, so you're not all like nervous and weird about it.
Right.
Well, okay. hopefully you have an experienced person who will be nice to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was part one we just did there. That was part one. So we're not
gonna do... So on the real test, you will have to talk about three different topics in part one.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're all super easy and they're all about you. Like they're all
all about me.
Yeah.
They're all the questions about me.
They're all about Luke Thompson's podcast.
Really?
So just listen to every episode and memorize a couple and you'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Then.
All right. So
part two.
In part two, I'm going to ask you to speak about a topic for 1 to 2 minutes. You will have 1 minute to prepare your answer and make some notes if you wish. Do you understand?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. And then I will pass you a paper and a pencil, and then I'll give you the booklet and show you the topic card. And you can't change the topic. Like, even if it's about really? Something you are not familiar with, doesn't matter. You have to talk about what I tell you. Okay. So this topic card says, describe a party that you enjoyed. And then there are three bullet points under that. You don't have to talk about the bullet points. Okay. You only have to talk about that topic. So if you can tell a story about a party, then that's, you know, that'll fill the 2 minutes.
Okay. And, what are the three bullet points that I have on this one?
It says, whose party was it and what was it? What was the party?
Yeah.
Where was the party held and what did people do during the party?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of the card, it says, and explain what you enjoyed about this party.
All right, then.
Okay. So... do you want 1 minute to take notes?
I've already taken notes, so that counts as my minute. I think I've already had my minute.
Okay,
let's go. Let's do it.
I'll keep track of the time. Okay.
Okay.
Can you? And then the examiner says, "Can you start speaking now, please?"
Oh, all right. So do you want me to start speaking now?
Yes. Please.
Okay. All right. I went to a party at the weekend, actually, on Saturday night, and it was really, really good fun. Let me tell you about it. Basically, what happened was that my wife was invited to this party, and well, if she was invited, I was invited too. You see, because that's the way it works in a marriage. So it was one of her best friends having her 30th birthday, and this friend, who's called Roxanne, decided that the theme of the party would be rainbows, because she's all into rainbow. She loves rainbows. She loves rainbows and unicorns. And so she decided that rainbows would be the theme of the party. And loads of people were invited. There were like 75 guests, which was brilliant. And before we came to the party, everyone was given a colour. So we were given different colour groups. So there was, like, you know, all the colours of the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, cool. and purple and all that. And so my wife and I were in the yellow category. So we had to dress up in yellow costumes. And so, first of all, I was really nervous. I was thinking, oh, God, I'm going to look like a right idiot dressed in yellow. I don't have anything yellow. So I had to borrow some trousers from a friend and a T-shirt from another friend. And my wife and I went to, like, a little gift shop, and we bought some fancy dress stuff. She bought, like, this feather boa made of yellow feathers. And I bought a yellow wig made of yellow feathers. And so when we put all this stuff on, she was wearing like this really nice yellow dress, and I was wearing all my yellow stuff with a yellow wig and everything. We put it all on. We actually looked really, it looked really cool. It looked really great. And suddenly, with all the stuff on, we both felt like having a really good time. So we went to the party, and it was held in this sort of art gallery thing that Roxanne knows someone who owns this art gallery space. So that's where the party was. And we arrived, and it was full of people in crazy, ridiculous clothing in different colours. And they were all the colours of the rainbow. And, for example, the red people were sort of dressed...
Okay, that's 2 minutes.
Oh,
thank
okay.
you.
Well, I had a really good time anyway.
And then the examiner usually asks one closing question, like, do you like to throw parties?
I prefer to go to other people's parties, to be honest.
Okay, just because and that closing question, you only have to give like a one sentence answer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the purpose of that closing question is actually not to get you to talk more, but to just finish part two in a, like, yeah, I don't know, like a cohesive way,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
just to get you to stop talking and let you know that it's time to finish.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So don't worry about that last question. It doesn't matter.
Like, okay.
You could literally give one word and it'd be fine.
Okay.
Okay. And then the examiner says, thank you, and takes back the booklet, the paper and pencil, and says, you have been talking about a party you enjoyed recently. Mm-hmm. In this part, I'm going to ask you some more general questions related to this.
Okay.
First of all, let's talk about family parties. What are the main reasons why people organize family parties in your country?
I suppose one of the main reasons is just to get just to have an excuse to get the family together. You know, sometimes you need an excuse to bring everyone together, especially if you're all grown up and you've moved out of the parents' house and everything. And it's just nice to have a reason, have an occasion for everyone to get together. And there may be specific times like a birthday or maybe, you know, even a funeral or a marriage or something like that. But normally it seems the main thing is just to give everyone a chance to get together and catch up and stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you think all the family members look forward to these get-togethers?
Well, it's always complicated. I think it's not just my family, but I think probably any family, there's always some complication. And, you know, Christmas is a perfect example of that, that, you know, the idea is that it's meant to be this great sort of occasion where the family is all very nice to each other. It's all about giving and receiving and sharing time together. But in fact, a lot of the time, it seems families just, you know, they feel forced to stay together and there's lots of friction and they argue and people end up, you know, sort of storming out and getting drunk and it's a total disaster. So, you know,
that's what happens in America as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's not just in the UK. Yeah. So I think just, yes, go on. Sorry.
Do you think these realities of family celebrations, do you think this is true in most countries today?
I expect so. I think that human nature is universal. And I think that I'm sure that whenever families get together, there's usually a bit of friction because, you know, they say that you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. And even though you're all related, often, you know, you can be quite different personalities. And the fact that you're a family unit means that you sometimes feel obliged or forced to spend time with these people when, in fact, you'd much rather be off with your friends. So I think that it's probably human nature. And I imagine in any culture you can go and observe families that have rows and arguments with each other. I think it's perfectly normal everywhere.
Let's move on to national celebrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kinds of national celebrations do you have in your country?
Well, national celebrations, let's see. Well, I mean, you know, we've got the royal family in our country and there are occasionally big national celebrations that revolve around the royal family. For example, not long ago, we had the royal wedding between Kate Middleton and Prince William. And that was a big national celebration. And why? Well, on one hand, because obviously everyone was happy that the prince and Kate were going to get married, but also because everyone got a day off. Yay! We all got the day off. It's a bit like Labor Day.
People got the day off for
That's
the
right.
wedding.
We all got the day off. So naturally, everyone was delighted that the royals were getting married. And never mind the amount of money that was being spent on it. Never mind that. It was a good excuse to have a party and have a few drinks and have a day off. So, of course, everyone was delighted with that.
Was there a discussion of the people's opinions on this amount of money that was spent?
Yes, actually, there was. There was a lot of discussion around that point. And I think in the end, the celebration won the argument. it did, because on the day when it actually happened, in fact, you know, the vast majority of people, despite their political views, actually tuned in and watched it. And it was, I think it was very difficult. Yeah, I think it was very difficult for people to not feel a little bit interested or moved by it. I think we enjoyed the spectacle in general. And I'm not like a super royalist myself. I think I'm fairly open-minded about these things, but I think that most people probably kind of enjoyed it. You know, some people were sort of used it as a chance to be extremely nationalistic and super patriotic. Other people who don't care about these things, I think they just found it to be a fascinating spectacle. And in fact, the wedding itself was not too opulent. They didn't go over the top with the decorations. It didn't seem to be that expensive. I'm sure it was a very expensive occasion, but it wasn't like covered in gold and like massive amounts of expense. It was actually quite modest. You know, it took place in Westminster Abbey and, you know, it was fairly modestly decorated and tastefully done. So I think on balance, I think it was well received, even though, yeah, there was plenty of argument about it being unnecessary. But generally, the balance of opinion seems to be in favor of the royal family at the moment. Yeah.
I think it's might be more in favor of the royal family than your nation's leader right now.
Well, yeah, David Cameron. Yeah.
Here in the news.
David Cameron.
Unfortunately. Yeah. But this isn't a politics podcast.
No.
Anyway. yeah, so that was good. So in part three, those are the types of questions you're asked. Like a lot of questions about cultural traditions, mm-hmm. Your opinions on the current state of society and how it's different than the past. Mm. How might it be different in the future? So those are the general sort of functions of the questions. And again, I mean, if this is why we need this culture of thinking, right? If all you're doing is sitting and playing PS3 or whatever, mm-hmm. like you're not going to have anything to talk about.
Right.
So another good reason to investigate some of these podcasts, especially the comedy podcast like we've mentioned. So you get the feeling of how to talk about like observations in a funny way or how to pick things apart in an interesting manner.
Yeah.
Different phrases you could use, stuff like that.
Yeah. And also these comedians and things, they to an extent, they are sort of like opinion makers as well. Because if if you listen to, I don't know, Bill Burr or something like that, then he's got fairly strong opinions on, you know, stuff like sport and issues relating to sport. And so a lot of the time people can just kind of like take or borrow the attitudes of some of these people that they've listened to. And I think a lot of native speakers do this too. You know, when they're in the pub having a drink and they're sharing their opinions, a lot of the time they're just repeating opinions that they've heard other people say. You know, it's just the way that people have conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think if you are interested in comedy, right? If you watch stand-up comedy in the UK or in North America, they're talking about very serious issues. They're talking about like up-to-date news, like I don't know, the royal family wedding or immigration or things that are super serious. And the way that they talk about them, they're able to give opinions that other people cannot. Yeah. Like they're able to sort of share insights and be honest about what people are thinking that most people can't say, right? Because they're being funny, so they're allowed to say a lot of stuff.
That's right. That's one of the great things about comedy is that you know, a lot of serious issues are being talked about, and it's really entertaining and amusing at the same time. Yeah. So I always recommend my listeners to check out stand up comedy. What was that podcast you mentioned? It was Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Uh huh.
And what was the other one?
How Did This Get Made?
How Did This Get Made? Meaning like about like bad movies.
Yeah, they choose one bad movie every 2 weeks.
Right.
And then they have a super hilarious conversation, like picking it apart, like how it doesn't make sense.
Fantastic. I love doing that. Honestly, it's one of my favorite things. It's just sitting in front of a telly with a movie on, with some of my friends around, having a few beers or whatever, and just destroying a terrible movie and just making fun of it. It's just brilliant fun. Even great movie. I even enjoy doing that with great films. I just love talking nonsense about films. It's brilliant.
Me too.
Yeah.
Do you remember that show, Mystery Science Theater 3000?
No, I've never heard of it.
Oh my God. It's pretty old. I don't know how old you are, but I think it's from the 90s, but there have been some like resurgences of it on Comedy Central. And it like the premise of it was like what you saw on your TV screen was like a movie screen with a guy and a robot sitting in front of it, and so you're watching the movie with them and they're talking about it the whole time. It's so funny. I'm sure you can see stuff on YouTube. Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Mystery Science Theater 3000. All right, I'm gonna check it out. All right, well, so how did I do in the speaking exam then? I mean, what do you reckon? I know it normally takes a long time to come to a conclusion about someone's score, but what do you reckon? What kind of score do you reckon I got?
I would give you a 9.
Yeah, really?
I'm gonna commit to a 9.
I'm glad. To be honest, I'm relieved. If I'd got anything less than a 9, I would have been a bit worried. Oh my God.
It was touch and go there for a while, but I think you pulled through at the end.
Yeah, I probably rambled on a little bit. So I tend to do that. I tend to just go on and on. And like in part two, for example, I didn't come to a conclusion. I didn't finish my anecdote. You had to interrupt me. I think that's probably a weak point of mine.
No, that's the way you should. That's the way you should do.
Really?
It's impossible to like craft your answer so you have like introduction, body, conclusion, and you know, like every spoken answer. That's impossible.
Right.
And it's not authentic, and it's not what the examiner wants. It's better just to keep going and let the examiner stop you. Because you're not going to lose points for that. Yeah.
All right, good. Thank goodness.
So good job.
Good. I'm glad. All right, Jessica, it's been fantastic. fantastic to have you on Luke's English Podcast. I've really enjoyed it. And I hope
it was super fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, anytime. And thanks for all the advice that you've given to my listeners about taking the IELTS speaking exam. I'm sure that those of them who are, no doubt will be taking the exam, I'm sure that's going to be very, very useful indeed. And even those who aren't taking the exam, I think that we've said some useful things too.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah, I think, and you know, a lot of my students, well, not a lot, but some of my students are, they don't have to take the exam for any specific reason. They're just at a point in their English when they want something to put on their CV, or they need a reason to study.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like if you're upper intermediate level, then maybe you just need a direction. You need a focus to sort of push yourself into learning more. So taking an exam like this is a good reason to do that. So if you guys are curious about the exam, go to our website. IELTS.allearsenglish.com and you could see videos of me talking about the exam, get some extra resources, listen to our podcast, stuff like that.
Okay.
Lots of good stuff.
Brilliant. Yeah. IELTS.allearsenglish.com, and the podcast is called IELTS Energy Podcast with Jessica.
Yeah.
The examiner of excellence.
I need to bring that back. I do not use that name enough.
I think you need business cards, clearly. That's clearly the way forward.
Seriously, a tattoo, something.
Yeah. That's right. Everyone should get tattoos with that ring on it. They would be weird, but let's try and make that happen. All right, Jessica, it's lovely to talk to you. Have a great day, because it's like a 9:20 in the morning where you are, right?
No, 10:20.
10:20 in the morning. Okay, well, it's now the evening for me. I'm going to go to the supermarket and do the shopping.
All right.
It's exciting where I live.
Woohoo! Thanks for sharing that. Yay!
You're welcome. All right, then. Have a great day, and hopefully speak to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Luke. You too.
Okay. Bye then.
Bye.
All right, so that was my conversation with Jessica Beck from IELTS Energy Podcast and AllEarsEnglish.com. Check out her stuff online. Some really useful things there. Okay, did you? I hope you picked up a few things from that and just generally enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to check out the page for this episode on teacherluke.co.uk, and also the previous episode I did about IELTS, which I think was episode number 254. I think it was called Tips and Tricks for the IELTS Test. That was my previous episode about IELTS. Okay. All right. As ever, leave your comments under the page for this episode. And and that's it, basically. I'll speak to you again soon. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, it's just time for me to say goodbye. And I'm going to do it right now. So here we go. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.